We found that by doing the pilot program in the barbershop setting with LiveChair, we were able to see a 30% conversion for their customers that translated into booking PCP appointments. So there was a significant ROI through that LiveChair partnership by adding new patients into our PCP offices and also engaging our patients around chronic care, which again allowed them to manage their condition better and avoid escalation when it was not necessary.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
Hello, we're here today with Pothik Chatterjee, the former head of innovation at LifeBridge Health. Pothik, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan, for having me on your podcast.
So, Pothik, you've led digital health implementations with startups and corporate partners to address operational challenges around access and patient engagement. You've also overseen translational research initiatives and two incubator programs, including the 1501 Health, a payer-provider investment and incubator for early-stage digital health startups, and a joint venture with HealthWorks at CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield of Maryland, in addition to the LifeBridge Health Bio Incubator Program, which raised over $60 million for biomedical innovation. And LifeBridge Health Innovation Partners includes GetWell Network, Under Armour, LiveChair Health, and Higi, among others. So, Pothik, you've mentioned that LifeBridge, quote, still uses quite manual processes to get information from LifeBridge's EHR over to their insurance partner, unquote. Given 1501's health partnerships with BCBS, can you speak about your perception of payer interest in accessing clinical data?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jordan, for that great question. So the importance of payer-provider collaboration around data exchange cannot be overemphasized, because some of the biggest issues in our healthcare system are related to these manual processes and inefficiencies that currently exist. So more than a third of US healthcare costs today go towards this managing this bureaucracy. US insurers and providers spend more than $800 billion in 2017 on administration, or nearly $2,500 per person. That's more than four times the per capita administrative costs in Canada, which has a single payer system. So those statistics really illustrate how much overspending we have because of these manual processes and the back and forth between health systems on the provider side and the insurance companies on the payer side. And we have seen in other industries outside of healthcare the use of automation, the use of predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to make that data exchange much more faster, streamlined, and ultimately that translates into reduced expenses as well. There's a number of ways that our health systems and our payers have been working together through programs like 1501 Health, which, as you mentioned, is an incubator and investment program in digital health solutions. One of those examples is a company called Pair Team, which P-A-I-R, which is the first end-to-end provider enablement solution for Medicaid. So Pair Team is a startup, and they provide wraparound technology, a care team, and EMR embedded support tools to coordinate patient care and automate value-based care operations. So Pair Team came out of San Francisco, out of Y Combinator, which is a very well-known incubator for technology startups. And they provide a remote team and AI to automate workflow, provide infrastructure to improve medical practices, particularly efficiencies around billing, so that these independent primary care clinics or FQHCs can use the Pair Team technology to improve efficiency. They can triple the rate of annual wellness visits and increase revenues, as Pair Team has demonstrated for many clinics around the country over the last few years.
So many of our listeners, Pothik, to Healthy Data Podcast are CIOs of large healthcare delivery systems or their counterparts. These large healthcare delivery organizations sometimes do have their own accelerators or incubators and have partnered with startups, but others are more reluctant to take on perceived risk with perceived unproven models associated with startups. Can you speak to some extent about how LifeBridge or any other healthcare delivery organization with whom you've partnered with has worked with these startups in order to facilitate faster data exchange, particularly between payers and providers to help them access that clinical data?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in the innovation and digital health space now for 8 years, almost for a decade, between LifeBridge Health, which is in the community health space here in Baltimore, Maryland, as well as with Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, which is a well-known academic medical center. And what I've found is, as you mentioned, that health systems do perceive that there is some risk in either partnering or investing in technology startups, because startups inherently have risk associated with them due to their early stage. And there's a number of ways that health systems can mitigate that risk. The first one is through pilot programs where they can partner with the startup to implement the technology in a clinical setting through a phased pilot program that can last anywhere from 6 months to a year. And basically, these pilot programs give the startup an opportunity to prove the value of their technology, whether that's a mobile application for patient communication post-discharge, like GetWell Loop, which is something that we have scaled at LifeBridge Health across all 5 hospitals across the system, or if it's an AI diagnostic tool that can be used by radiology providers to help find any issues that the human eye may have missed to really complement and support the clinical diagnostic. These pilot programs give the startups and the health system a chance to see whether or not the technology is actually effective in improving outcomes or improving provider or patient experience. And typically, the health system will have either an innovation department or they will have a clinical champion within the service line that can set up KPIs or key performance indicators that the startup will have to meet in order to show success. And then at the end of the pilot program, if the startup is successful, then they can negotiate a bigger contract for implementation and utilization on a larger scale. And there has been a lot of criticism about pilots in the industry, because startups will say that healthcare systems are slow moving and sometimes the pilots are not effective, or even if the pilot is effective, that after the pilot, that's when there's sometimes a challenge in scaling the adoption of the technology. But based on my experience, if you set up the pilot in an effective way and identify the key performance indicators that are meaningful to the health system, and you have a buy-in from a clinical champion and an administrative champion, that can be a really effective way to develop that relationship and grow the use of the technology in the health system. The second way that I found to be a really helpful risk mitigant for health systems that are trying to figure out how to work or invest in health tech startups is to partner with a payer. And that's exactly what we did with LifeBridge Health and HealthWorks, the investment and innovation arm of CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield in Maryland. There's a number of reasons why that worked really well. The first is that both the provider and the payer have common aims of reducing expenses through the implementation of innovative technologies. The second is that there's very similar goals that the innovation groups of both the hospital and the insurance side have which is in setting up these pilot programs and operationalizing them. In some cases, there might be common aims around commercializing technologies that have been coming out of the organizations, and they're looking to scale it and sell it to other hospitals and other health insurance networks across the country. So for that reason, the LifeBridge Health and HealthWorks partnership very organically gave birth to 1501 Health. And I think that's a model that could really benefit health systems across the nation. Maryland has some really inherent advantages to it as a state with our regulatory environment, where we are incentivized to control costs by the state of Maryland, by the way that the health rates are set across the system. So that was another advantage for the creation of 1501 Health. But I do think that there's value in other hospitals across the country to look to their health payers and see if there's collaborative programs that they could start.
So Pothik, you did mention just now Get Well Loop. Previously, you have published a study of how LifeBridge's customized automated digital patient engagement application, Get Well Loop, has been correlated with the prevention of 30-day revisits after home discharge from an emergency department or hospital inpatient setting. You mentioned that this is also relevant to the all-patient, all-payer rate setting system in Maryland. Question is, what are some of your lessons learned with the development and rollout of Get Well Loop?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We had a lot of really valuable lessons that we learned since 2016 when we first rolled out Get Well Loop with our orthopedic service line. So the reason that we started in that particular service line is because when our patients were coming in for various orthopedic surgeries, like knee surgery or back surgery, when they were being discharged after the surgery, they were given large stacks of paper with manual instructions on what their care needs to look like after their discharge. In some cases, the patients might need rehab services after knee surgery, or they might have a long list of medications. They might have follow-up appointments that they need to take. And oftentimes, patients felt overwhelmed and confused by what exactly they need to do and what cadence they need to follow for all of these different instructions. We found the biggest lesson learned was that the use of an automated technology tool simplified the instructions and the information for our patients. So it significantly improved patient experience because they were getting automated reminders on their mobile app through Get Well Loop about the medications they need to take, follow-up appointment reminders, and it was a two-way communication platform. So they could also send any questions to their LifeBridge Health provider team so that they could get clarification about the discharge instructions. What also benefited us at LifeBridge Health with this implementation and rollout was that LifeBridge Health has its own call center that managed these electronic messages through the Get Well Loop mobile app. So that call center was able to either respond to the messages or, if needed, escalate it to the care team. So a big lesson learned in that rollout was the value of having that call center. And that call center has also become increasingly important with COVID and the pandemic happening, in the sense that we saw a huge spike in our telemedicine volume. So that call center was able to manage the messages and alerts from different types of telemedicine services and remote patient monitoring services as well. Another big lesson for us was the language and the way that we were communicating through the different Get Well loops. So the loops are designed as finite communication models. So depending on the service line, depending on the patient experience, it can be anywhere from 5 to 10 days long after the patient is discharged. And we learned a lot through patient surveys and patient feedback about the simplicity of language that is needed, having different language options available for our diverse patient population, like Spanish or Russian, for our Jewish patient population. Many of our Orthodox Jewish patients had Russian as their first language. So we worked with GetWell Network to make sure that we had simple, clear language available in multiple languages to really engage the patients. And then the third biggest lesson that you alluded to was that even beyond the improvement of patient experience and patient engagement, there was a clinical benefit and a financial benefit to the implementation of GetWell Loop, because when you have patients that are more engaged around their care and taking the correct medications and getting to their follow-up appointments, they're less likely to go back into the emergency department for follow-up care because it's not escalating to that level because they're already getting their key needs met. So by doing that study, we found that there was a reduction in the 30-day revisit to our ED. And what was really great about that particular study that we did is that we were able to track the patients not only when they were going to LifeBridge Health emergency departments, but we were able to see visits to any other EDs in the state of Maryland as well. And that's because of a really helpful data tool that we have in Maryland called the CRISP, which is the Chesapeake Regional Information System portal that allows us to track our patients' journeys outside of our own health systems as well. And that's HIE, a health information exchange that has been set up in different states in the country as well.
Thanks, Pothik, for telling our listeners about some of the lessons learned with that particular rollout of the startup. Continuing on the theme of accelerators, some of our listeners are likewise running health tech accelerators or are thinking of doing so. How would you characterize the value proposition of developing radically or incrementally disruptive products or services that LifeBridge has realized through 1501 Health and the LifeBridge Health Bioincubator?
Yeah, I would say the value proposition of 1501 Health as an incubator and investment program is in a couple of different areas. The first is 1501 Health offers $125,000 in capital directly to the startup, and it's a fairly competitive process. In past years, we have had 100 to 150 startups from across the nation, and in some cases outside of the United States as well, apply to the program for select positions. And the program has grown over the last couple of years from 5 startups in the first year to 7 in 2022 and last year. So it's a fairly competitive program. But even outside of the capital investment, the value proposition of 1501 Health also lies in the customized program that is put together over the 12 months of incubation, where each startup is matched with mentors and advisors that are really subject matter experts from the healthcare system side and from the insurance side. And the reason that's so unique is that there's very few payer provider incubators like this in the nation. 1501 Health, to my knowledge, is one of the first true payvider incubators. And the reason that is so important is because the startups are able to go to health systems to try to find clinical champions on their own. It does take time and effort. But what's difficult is figuring out what the business model is going to look like. How is the startup going to get paid for the technology that they're building? Is it going to get paid in the fee-for-service model? Or is there going to be a value-based care arrangement where the startup will get paid based on the actual clinical value that they deliver in a value-based care contract arrangement? And for those types of decisions, it's really valuable for the entrepreneur to be able to speak directly with a healthcare insurance expert.
You're well addressing the value to the biotech startup entrepreneurs. However, that's not the listener base here. I'm wondering if you were able to capture the actual ROI to the healthcare delivery system. So to what extent would you say LifeBridge was able to actualize returns, was able to quantify the amount of costs saved, was able to generate new revenues or new business through these different startups.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The value proposition goes both ways for the health system as well. Mm-hmm. I would say there's two main ways that Lifebridge Health was able to capture the value from investing and partnering with startups through 1501 Health. The first is through the capital investment itself. We were able to see appreciation of our investment in the startups through market appreciation. In the current environment, I would say it's a little bit challenging to see a lot of IPOs from startups because of the market challenges and the market downturn that we saw towards the end of 2022. But it's really important to take a medium to long-term view when you're investing in these startups, because it typically takes between 3 to 5 years for the startups to have either an IPO or an acquisition that would lead to the capital appreciation. But we did see appreciation in the market value through further investments from venture capital investors after we made our original 1501 Health investment. The second important way that our health system at Lifebridge Health was able to see value was by offering new services to our patients that didn't exist before. And in some cases, seeing incremental revenue through remote patient monitoring or offering virtual services to chronic patients like type 2 diabetic patients. So I'll give you one or two examples. The first example is with Baby Life Advice, which is from our first cohort. They are a telemedicine platform for maternal care and infant care. So we partnered at Lifebridge Health with Baby Life Advice to offer lactation coaching and new parent education to our OB patients at Sinai Hospital, which is our largest hospital within Lifebridge Health. And we offered these courses in person in a smaller capacity before we partnered with Baby Life Advice. But having the telemedicine access and 24/7 coverage from Baby Life Advice really helped us expand the coverage that we were able to offer to our patients. The second example is Live Chair Health, which is also from our first cohort of 1501 Health. This is a really unique startup that we invested in, where they are focusing on the barbershop setting as a way to engage Black men around chronic care management, typically for diabetes and high blood pressure, and in some cases, obesity as well. So LifeChair Health was developed as a mobile app for customers to book their barbershop appointments, but they realized that the customers were having conversations with their barbers around chronic conditions. So they reached out to Lifebridge Health and 1501 Health to see if we might be able to train the barbers to take blood pressure measurements directly in the barbershop setting and include information about Lifebridge Health primary care providers through the LifeChair mobile app. So we partnered with this company and we found that there were additional patients within our hospital geographies that had not seen their primary care providers for over a year. And we found that by doing the pilot program in the barbershop setting with LifeChair, we were able to see a 30% conversion for their customers that translated into booking PCP appointments. So there was a significant ROI through that LifeChair partnership by adding new patients into our PCP offices and also engaging our patients around chronic care, which again allowed them to manage their condition better and avoid escalation when it was not necessary.
And just a quick follow-up, did Lifebridge experience any exits from the startups that have gone through the platform and get an infusion of capital?
We have not had exits from 1501 Health because it's only in its third year. But GetWell Loop is a great example of a company that we had partnered with when it was at the pre-acquisition stage. It was called Health Loop. It was a startup out of California. And 3 years after we partnered in them through the pilot program, they were acquired by a larger technology company called GetWell Network in Bethesda, Maryland.
And that, and I guess that acquisition ended up leading to an infusion of capital to LifeBridge in exchange for the equity. Is that right?
Not in the case of Health Loop, but it was that experience of partnering with Health Loop through that journey that gave us the impetus to launch 1501 Health as an investment program, because we saw how much value we were giving from the hospital system by helping to customize their program, offering clinical feedback. That's what gave us the inspiration to actually start taking an equity position in future startups.
Excellent. Well, Pothik, I'd like to thank you for joining us today as the former head of innovation at LifeBridge Health. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.